Welcome to Nostalgia Pilots, a Mobile Fighter G Gundam podcast that draws out your latent fighting ability and bumps it up to 120%. I'm Hugh.
I'm Jared.
And I'm Spence.
And we're here to talk about Mobile Fighter G Gundam Episode 30, Beautiful Fighter, Dangerous Allenby.
This is the first one I did not watch dubbed, so it had way different feels for me.
Oh, yeah? That's interesting. I had some real changes of opinion during this episode. It started with, we're right in the middle of the fight already. We're actually in the last seconds of a fight. And I thought, oh, are we cheaping out here already? Or are we just cutting to the end so we can save on the budget for this fight? And so I kind of came in a little bitter taste in my mouth, but this episode actually definitely turned me around as it proceeded.
Well, it's the last seconds of a fight that's also the first seconds of a fight. So, because Argo Gulski just gets warfed this episode, like, hardcore.
Yeah,
my heart hurts for Argo. Like, did not stand a chance.
Yeah.
So what we have is, you know, Argo's Gundam that we know and love. Well, I know and love. And then we have a Sailor Moon-style Gundam with Blanca hair from...
Okay, so here's where we have to step back, because although I did enjoy a lot about this episode, I'm not sure that they understand what Sweden is. The name, okay. Okay, so the actual name of the pilot is Allenby. What was the full name, though?
Allenby Beardsley,
yeah. Which put me in mind of Aubrey Beardsley, which was a British illustrator who was influenced heavily by Japanese art styles, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe even, I looked up, like, is Allenby a common Swedish name that I'm unfamiliar with? No. So the only other Allenby I could find was another British, like, general. So I don't know where this name struck me as, I think we've even mentioned this before, that sense that, what was the baseball game, the Nintendo baseball game that just generated a bunch of English-sounding names, but none of them particularly made sense? Like, John Doris My Johnson, or whatever? Like, that's what this felt like. They were like, well, this like is...
Johnson Barndor.
This is what Swedish sounds like, right?
Well, I think they just sort of like, who do we want as the Swedish fighter? We already have the Norwegian fighter being a Viking. So what does Sweden have? And the only thing they could come up with was the Swedish bikini team. So it got to be the hot girl.
And you know, crazy all or nothing scientists. But that's beside the point.
Yes. Yeah, so it is the Noble Gundam, which is named after
the Nobel Peace Prize. Yeah. Or the Nobel Prize. That's right. And so literally it does look like, if Sailor Moon and Sailor Venus merged their two senshi appearances, so the Sailor Moon outfit with Sailor Venus hair, mm-hmm. That is the Noble Gundam. So rips off Argo's arm. So that's going to cost a pretty penny. And everyone's like, oh, Argo lost! Argo lost! And he gets put in his prison truck. Per usual, but the driver looks a little familiar.
So this is like the second time we've seen Domon do this sort of trick where he impersonates one of the Neo-Russian like officers to get like close to Argo. So did he keep the uniform or did he beat up another guy?
He beat up another guy because he's got a fighting spirit.
Right.
But they're all basically friends now, so why does he have to sneak in? This would be like, Hugh orders pizza one night and I show up as the Domino's guy. Like, why would I do that?
Well, okay, so I think it's partially a visibility thing, because if the media is following them constantly and they want to have a clandestine meeting as part of the Shuttle Alliance or whatever... sometimes they're going to have to disguise themselves. You know, like Sai Saichi tries to disguise himself in the last episode as a normal kid.
With those definitely blending in sunglasses that he was wearing.
Definitely blending in 90s, maybe 80s era sunglasses.
Okay, but that pulls us immediately, I think, into the next scene, because isn't the next sequence where they're at the arcade, and they're like, there's like horse racing, which I guess these kids, these, you know, small children are super into off-track betting or whatever.
Oh, but anyway. But that's definitely a thing in Japanese arcades. Like, that is...
also a thing in, like, boardwalk arcades, too, here in the States. So, you know, it's the digital age. And, again, this also reminds me of Sailor Moon, in that Sailor Moon begins with everybody meeting up at the arcade, like, almost every episode.
Huh, like, I hadn't actually even thought of that, but yeah, that's totally... Huh. Yeah.
The arcade, in many ways, the arcade is the tavern of 90s anime.
Yeah. And,
that's fair.
You know, this is, there's my favorite, so arcades are also my favorite thing to throw into futuristic role-playing games, and my favorite thing in that is doing a Rock'em Sock'em Robots style fighting game, where it's VR. And so naturally they have one, which makes me very happy.
Yes.
It actually put me very much in mind, speaking of mid 90s arcades, I was like, oh, this is like Street Fighter 25. Like, here we go. Future Street Fighter.
And I mean, this is kind of where the series feels its most Street Fighter-y, because there's definitely also that vibe throughout the series where you do have the fighters from their home countries displaying their national pride and also their national techniques, where you have the big bearish Russian guy and the like little fast Chinese guy with martial arts powers and
rose bits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's how the French fight.
Back to the earlier point though, about keeping it sort of on the lowdown. We have one fighter who has clearly been just wiping the floor. I think they say that she's won 16 fights or something. She's undefeated thus far.
Undefeated thus far, under a minute for each round.
And of course, that immediately catches Doan's eye. He's like, ooh, Super Street Fighter, I love this game. And so he, of course, has to step up, but everyone's immediately, or he even says, I believe, hey, how about you let an expert fight? And they're all impressed with the fact that he's an actual Gundam pilot, but she is too. Why do we not care? Like, I knew that she was the Gundam pilot. Why were they not more impressed by this fact?
Well, I think she was like hiding out because she had snuck out. So she wasn't like, yep, I'm Alan B.
About the secret government program. Speaking of mid-90s tropes, wow. Secret government program, escaping from the X-Files, the smoking man just sitting around in the background there.
Yeah, she's also this episode's, like, weird government child soldier experiment.
Mm-hmm. So she's not the hero Yui?
Well.
Like, is, but is not?
She's also kind of the Troa in that she's an orphan who was just kind of raised by the military and nobody, and that's a thing that's reasonable in this universe that happens.
Well, while we're talking about this, though, we have to address the fact, like, we're jumping ahead a little bit, but she's being implanted or imprinted, I guess, with a fighting system that will override her own abilities and
Get
into the effects of that.
Yeah.
That just seems like such an echo of the Zero system.
Yeah, so this is very much a prototype Zero system.
So when thinking about sports, I also think about cross-training opportunities. You know, in hockey, they have rollerblading. In figure skating, they have ballet and things like that. This kind of game would be the ultimate kind of cross-training / blowing off steam if it was calibrated for Gundam fighters. And so having the two of them match pound for pound, hit for hit, and then they hit together so hard that they break the machine.
Yes.
Is like, but they had fun. It was a no stakes competition. Could have easily been a money making exhibition kind of thing. Why are the Gundam commissions not using this? You know? Hong Kong's onto something. Just saying.
Yeah, it definitely did seem like a scaled down version of the same tech.
But they had fun. Domon smiled. Was having fun.
Yeah, she was having very, fun. Very rare for Domon.
It was also a little sad, though, because I did have a thought during that whole sequence where I was like, maybe Allenby should be the main character of this show? Maybe Doman's not the person who should be the main character?
We've always,
also true.
Always said that Domon should not be the main character. If this story was Rain and Allenby, I'd be here for it.
Oh, yeah.
And then have a lesbian romance. And, if that, like, a hint at a lesbian romance, but not an actual one. That would just make my day. Okay, anyway.
They do go out of their way, I think, to make it clear that the two are very equally matched. Like, even in the way they animate that whole fight sequence, basically everything that she does, he does. Everything he does, she does. And they just reflect the animations in a lot of ways. And in the end...
Anything you can do.
Yeah, exactly. They kind of fight each other to a standstill with the machine exploding, so...
And then they have a moment of realization where she's like, oh, you're Domon! You're that other one! Allenby, right? Duh. And... she runs away. Domon smiles. Rain sees it. Dun, dun, dun!
Yeah, Rain spends most of this episode just kind of standing in the background being like, this is fine. No problem here.
I'm not jealous.
Everything's fine.
But
then we see what happens when she... the consequences of her actions when she gets back to Sweden HQ.
You know, besides they exploded an arcade...
I mean, there's that. But, I mean, who cares about collateral damage? It's fine.
Yeah, I feel like Domon probably just stuck that with the Japanese government. It's like, you guys take care of that. This is...
Yeah.
It's fine. Slap some devil cells on that. It'll be fine soon.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there could be no negative consequences of that, of adding DG cells to that at all. But she goes back, and they hook her up to this machine, and one of the doctors says... oh, you had some, you have elevated neural levels. Something interesting happened to you today, huh? And that was really creepy because she immediately gets super defensive, be like, don't go into my thoughts. And it makes me wonder how many times they've done that. Like, well, there's some serious trauma and trust issues.
Yeah. There's a lot of kind of drawing your own connections in this episode. My headcanon, of course, is that the reason that the Gundam looks like that is because they had to... I assume she's been in this program for a while, and they had to entice a small girl into being interested in this system in the first place. So she's literally just a like Sailor Moon fan who was like, yeah, okay, I'll do it, but the robot has to look like Sailor Moon. Like,
it has to look like a magic girl. It'll be fine.
Yeah, like,
and they're like, but we're Sweden. We've got to do something. And no.
I like Sailor Moon. Do it this way.
Exactly. So, yeah, there's a lot of dynamic there that we don't see in place. Oh, but I think we skipped a little interstitial scene that I want to go back to because I have a question. So we do get a little between sequence with Master Asia and, sorry, what's the name of the chairman again?
I think it's the chairman.
Oh, hold on.
So Master Asia and the chairman are in their little planning room. And I have a question. Who builds the Gunpla? Do you think it's Master Asia or do you think it's the chairman? One of them.
Chairman, obviously.
Yeah.
That guy's name is Wong Yun Fat.
I feel like what we have here is a generational problem where the video game nerds are now banding together to fight the Warhammer nerds who are sitting in there with their Gunpla and building their little war games. And I think that's really the tension at the heart of the show. Anyway.
Like the engineers versus...
You could be right, but I know nothing about Warhammer, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I know very little about Warhammer, because the one time I was looking at a Warhammer, like, a creepy dude came up to me and was like, are you in the hobby? I'm like, nope.
Do you want
and
to
And I never
it?
Went to that mall again.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a dangerous
Then we lit it on fire and walked away.
So, really, they're just here, though, to act as the tension for the rest of the episode, right? Because, of course, they shove the two Gunplas together, and it's going to be the Noble Gundam versus Domon, and he's going to have to fight.
Versus the God Gundam.
Yeah, so they just have a little scene where they scheme evilly, and Master Asia's like, well, I don't... Master Asia's like, no, there's something up about her, that she's not... There's something artificial about this. Like, because he can also tell that she has cold fists.
Mm-hmm. Her soul is not in her fists.
Right.
And so, as was alluded to earlier, after that whole scene where she's being monitored and stuff, Alan B. escapes with a rope out the window and jumps right onto a training domon.
Yeah, he's somehow right there.
Somehow right there, practicing. And she jumps on him. And they have this moment, and he's just like, come on, let's go back to where I'm hanging out in this boat, houseboat. And they're like, you should join us for dinner. She says, oh, no, I couldn't possibly. And then her stomach growls, and everybody laughs, breaks the tension. And you actually see how skinny she is, and you go, are they starving her on top of everything else?
Okay, and that she's just, like, very closely monitored, because she's, like, very...
She's closely monitored like a K-pop musician.
Possibly, yeah.
That's another tangent that Jason's not here for.
So I did wonder, though, and again, I'm not the Sailor Moon expert here, but was that not a trait of hers that she was constantly hungry?
Yes.
Yes, Sailor Moon was constantly hungry. They called her Meatball Head for more than one reason.
Yeah. The thing with Sailor Moon is, if you've ever seen, like, another Sentai show, like, or something like Ultraman, where, like, he's, like, a super heroic, good at everything kind of character, and then the team that support backs him up is mostly comic relief. Like, Sailor Moon flips that. It's the opposite. Like,
but you...
Sorry, the rest of the scouts are, like, very good at things, like, one is a super scientist, one is, like, an amazing cook and baker, and also great at sports, and then the other one is, like, this very, like, is like, literally psychic. And then Usagi likes eating, sleeping, and goofing off.
I mean, to be fair, so does Sailor Venus. She just has also a... She got lucky with a career as Sailor V. But ultimately, they are the two least effective characters in Sailor Moon, so I think it's really funny that they combined both of those two images in the Noble Gundam. It really speaks to how old is this is Alan B, and does she connect that, like, okay, internal lore being created right now, how well does she relate to Usagi and oh, shoot, what is her name? I can't remember Sailor Velas's name.
Oh, shoot, and I just finished reading Codename Sailor V.
No, hang on. Sailor Venus...
Minako.
...is Hinako. So, Minako. So, Mina and Usagi merge them into one person, and you have the Noble Gundam. And maybe that is a adolescent... like, dream for her to be, like, normal, quote-unquote. Yeah.
And according to the wiki, Alan B. is 17. So she's, okay, like, a little younger than Domon and most of the other fighters. She's about Saisaichi's age, but she's a little...
She's a little older than Saisaichi, because I think Saisaichi is, like, 15 or something.
Right, like, he's younger than her, but he's not much younger than her.
Right. So... But the youth aspect of it and the immaturity portion of it, like, she's forced to, if she's been raised in this government facility to fight and to do all these martial arts and go through all this extreme physical training, she is going to be socially behind in maturity. And that reflects in her playfulness and her desire to have some kind of normalcy. From this is just what I'm interpreting from what we've seen of her in this episode. And, you know, she and Domon decide that they are going to have the best fight, the best Gundam fight ever, because they see in each other fun.
Right.
And that seems so rare for these Gundam fighters. With the exception of Saisaichi.
Yeah, I think that's definitely worth keeping in mind, too, when I don't want to skip too far ahead, but to how things conclude and what that end sequence looks like, the fact that it goes from this is something we're doing because we enjoy it too. This is something we're doing because we're being made to.
Right. So you sort of. Yeah, you sort of do have the idea that, like, they do reiterate the idea that the martial artists communicate with their fists, and, like, this is L&B actually being able to have a conversation with someone for the first time.
Exactly. Like, when you find somebody that actually gets you, the age difference doesn't matter. The gender difference doesn't matter. It's, oh, this is a person I can connect with, and I am going to connect with them as much as I can in this immediate time. And, like, I've just started getting into sumo, and you see that in the sumo ring as well, where you have these competitors who have these amazing bouts, and instead of having that bravado that we've seen with other competitors in Gundam, you see a camaraderie and a desire to push each other to be the absolute best combatant. Mm-hmm. And that is more what we see here with these two than anybody in the Shuffle Alliance.
Yeah, I was actually about to say they managed to establish that better between these two in one episode than they managed to do that between anybody else in the Shuffle Alliance across all of the episodes we've had this far in a weird way.
Yeah. And maybe it's because she's a girl, and so she doesn't have to out machismo Domon.
Well, I think you're right, though, in that it's just approaching it with fun, right? Like, she's the first person who's just been like, let's do something that doesn't necessarily have huge stakes. Everyone else is always, like, whatever their side job is, there's always fairly high stakes involved. I mean, some of them are even imprisoned on the side. Like, anyway, yeah.
Like, I think that with the exception of Chibidi, like, all the other Shuffle Alliance members are, like, fighting either, like, for their country or for their temple or for their, like, imprisoned crew. Like, they don't sort of have... And even Domon is, you know, fighting for his father who's been unjustly imprisoned.
In cryostasis, but, no less.
Yes.
Which, is that really worse than being conscious and imprisoned?
I think it's definitely more dangerous because there's a lot that can go wrong with someone in cryostasis.
The weird thing,
but they're not aware of it. Anyway.
Yeah. The weird thing is...
wonder if he'll teach him to knit.
Crochet. You only need one hook.
As bad as Argo's situation is, while they all have sort of, you know, high stakes, but as bad as Argo's situation is... Hers is kind of worse, right? Like, she has no free will at all. Like, at least Argo is sort of like, let's make a deal, fine. She literally just, like, they push a button and off she goes, so.
Yeah, it's pretty gross.
So you've got, and as you get with these kind of tropes, you have the one scientist that actually looks after LMB's well-being, and then you have the one that is solely... focused on winning fast and being supreme. But the one that's focused on her well-being sees that, again, to use another sumo term, that fighting spirit between the two of them. And they have this amazing fight. Everybody is shook by it, you know, because they're matching and it's exciting. And they're fighting with more than just the desire to win. They're fighting with the desire for the fight itself.
The hook worked well enough that once, you know, you have good scientist and evil scientist. Evil scientist steps in and he's like, let's engage death system or whatever.
Yeah, like he's more interested in his system than he is in her well-being.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and even I was like, but no, it was such a good fight. Like, why would, you know... Anyway.
Why are you stopping? And then she loses her mind and turns Blanca on them. Mm-hmm. I say Blanca because we're again going to mix media and add Street Fighter to the mix.
Yeah, and she does sort of do the whole thing where her suit starts glowing red and then like her hair lifts up in these mm-hmm. Because the suit has this sort of like long trailing Sailor Venus hair that like comes up, and I guess it's like got fans or stuff behind it.
Mm-hmm. And electrocutes both of them.
Yeah.
And Domon presciently says that she does not have any soul in her fists.
Mm-hmm. He goes and further after he rises. Okay, so there's that moment where like they're like, "Is it over?" He actually rises up and says something. He's like, "This isn't even fun for me anymore." Like that's, you know, that was the point. Yeah. I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "I'm bored of this." Yeah, I believe he even says, "I'm bored. I wanted to fight the actual you, not this." So, yeah. And that was an interesting rejoinder because so much of the previous show we watched was about the Zero System. Like, it, just everything was so focused on the fighting, you know. Anyway, I was like, are they having an internal fight over here? Or, anyway.
Mm-hmm. So he says a little prayer to his Gundam because apparently his Gundam is his god. And he says, God Gundam, help me bring her soul back to her fists. And it works!
I'm not sure the writers of this show understand Christianity. Or maybe I don't understand Christianity. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be the Christian monotheism god.
But it's definitely that same mid-90s sort of like Evangelion Xeno sort of like fashionable thing to be like, well, here's a religious reference. Kind of hip.
And it works temporarily. But as with, you know, I'm going to again cross-reference with D&D. And after you go into a rage as a berserker or a barbarian, you get a point of exhaustion afterwards. And that's what happens with Allenby. She can get in a few more good punches, but then she's out because she's just exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
So technically, Domon wins, but only because her own team sabotaged her.
We do get to see another little bit more transformation on the God Gundam, right? Like, there's some more transformy bits because of the crest. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yes. Yeah, so he did use the crest to, like, as we've seen, like, the crest kit has some sort of healing thing, because they used their crest to, like, get rid of the DG cells, and they've done some other things with the crests in the past, so.
But I'm glad you brought that back up, because Argo, watching the match, yells through his crest, apparently, for Domon to save her.
Yeah, and there is that little sense of that, like, with our powers combined, we are... Like, I mean, it's not that direct, but it does feel like there's somehow a support action involved there. Mm-hmm. A role for advantage or something.
Also, welcome to Nostalgia Pilots, where we mix every single kind of media into this show that we're watching and reviewing. So, yeah. And carries her off.
We get a really striking end sequence, right? Because there is that kind of, I think Hugh mentioned it either pre-show or just early on, where I thought for a second Allenby might be dead. Like, she's kind of got this fragile system thing going on, you know, scientists tinkering with her, where I was already kind of like, is she on the edge? And so I thought, oh, maybe, like, he killed her. But they do talk about her in terms of, oh, you know, maybe one day she'll be a great fighter, whatever it is at the end.
I definitely feel like they sort of, like, did the animation, and then maybe they changed the script.
But Master Asia does say that he sees a lot of potential in her.
Yeah, that's what it is. But there is that sequence where the God Gundam is holding the Noble Gundam, and then Domon's holding Allenby, and it's kind of like an echo of the two visually, and that was kind of nice. And then you kind of think, like, I just wish they had inserted a tiny rain glowering in the corner, because that would have been...
It was implied.
Yeah,
it was implied. Because Rain's kind of like, this is the part of Rain that she can't connect with Domon on.
Mm-hmm. And we do have that sequence, like where, you know, Domon asks her back to dinner, and they are sort of hanging out on the boat, and Rain's just like, in those scenes, she's like, I'm going to hang out with you and do this thing. Like, I don't have anything better to do. There's nothing more important right now. I'm going to hang out with Domon and this other girl who has shown up.
And you see the division there, because when she's complaining about her team and how they won't let her do anything, Rain tries to be like, oh, I'm sure they're not that bad. I mean, you're a team. They're your teammates. And Allenby shuts that down and is like, no, they're not my teammates. You don't understand. And Rain doesn't understand.
And I think that's a little foreshadowing when we find out more about what's going on with the Devil Gundam and Rain's father.
Gotcha.
Who is the scientist. And, like, Rain has been put on this mission, but, like, Rain thinks of her mission very much as we're a team and we're doing this. But, she's not really fully cognizant of what's fully going on in the Neo-Japanese government, I think. Like, when we saw the flashback, Endomon had to fight that, like, simulated Devil Gundam.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because, yes, they totally do imply that early on, but it's funny how far away that part of the show feels now, because I'm so into this sort of contemporary part where it's all, you know, the fighting tournament, and it feels like it's been the fighting tournament forever. It's always been the fighting tournament, but no, that's not true. We had, like, the jungle sequence and everything before that. Like, so much was kind of...
Bart's brooder has not been revealed yet, even though we know, because somebody gave us spoilers.
The mysterious Racer X.
It's been race banned all along.
The whole name means black brother.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Mm.
Anyway, so yeah, and that's the episode.
Yeah, Allenby will return,
which I'm happy to hear.
Did I just literally kind of steamroll this whole episode? If so, I didn't mean to, but no, you know, I do also like she's the first female pilot that we've seen.
I was very
other than Karen in 08, we have not seen another female pilot. We've seen Rain take the reins, but she's not a pilot.
Yeah, like that. Like Rain could pilot, but she's not the pilot.
Right. She can pilot when there's an emergency.
Right.
Like when Domon needs to have everything transferred out of one Gundam and into another.
Yes. And there's some other stuff she does later in the series that's actually pretty cool, but we don't.
She's awesome. Mm-hmm. Let's just be real.
Yeah, but we don't get a she's the Chun-Li of this fighting tournament.
Street Fighter.
Or the Sonya Blade of this tournament, depending on
which franchise you prefer.
Yeah, and it's not like the Universal Century Gundam that doesn't have a ton of women pilots, but does have more pilots in that. But that's mostly because we can get more character. A lot of those characters are in a lot of ways like Allenby, in that they're like artificial new types and like heavily leaning into that trope of the experimental pilot.
Mm-hmm.
So when we see characters there's a couple in Zeta Gundam, and there's a big one in Unicorn who's one of the main characters.
I can't help but be looping back to Gundam Wing, because I just can't, like, the old guys who experimented on everybody in that show are all basically considered heroes, more or less, even though they're talking about how awful they are all the time. Like, you kind of root for all those old dudes, but you're not rooting for the Swedish evil scientist, like...
No, well, those evil scientists did not have good hair.
So. I mean, not everybody can have Dr. Dude Bro's hair.
This is true.
So, speaking of, does that bring us to our favorite moments?
I think it does. The one thing, this wasn't my favorite moment, but I wrote it down and I wanted to make note of it. One of the other games that they showed in the arcade was that weird, like, game from Star Trek The Next Generation where the people were wearing, like, the clips on all their fingers. And I definitely noticed that and was like, that's a reference to a thing in this episode that's already loaded with Sailor Moon references.
Well, my favorite thing did actually happen in that arcade, so I'm going to mention it. Imagine hadoukening so hard you explode the machine, because that's what I was thinking of that entire time. I was like, Sonic Boom! Anyway.
Like, I think every child of the 90s dreams of being so good at an arcade machine it explodes.
There was just a second there when they pull in on that arcade and there's, like, sort of the central disc and the way they kind of set everything up. And I was like, oh, we're doing the whiz. We're doing the whiz. But anyway.
I did think that that was a really well-animated sort of fight where they're sort of using, like, different techniques and making it sort of look like it's a projection. And it did look very fluid.
Did anybody notice that the entrance to the arcade was a dragon's maw?
I did notice that, and that's also, like...
And so when the game blew up, the dragon's maw was billowing smoke, and I was like, oh, look, it's appropriate.
Yes. And that did make me nostalgic for the, like, the Sega arcades in Japan that are all pretty, like, fanciful and, like, coolly decorated. And have delicious crepe carts out front.
I don't know that I had a favorite moment, but I mentioned this before the episode. I'm grateful to know who the hell this character is, because for the holidays I got stickers for all the team, and there was this one blue-haired sticker, and I'm like, I don't know who this is. Jerd won't know who this is. But Hugh will, so I sent it to
you. I did. and I've got her on my writing notebook.
And it's almost dissipated because he uses it all the time. But I think my favorite part was how human she was, how human Allenby is, despite everything that she's been going through. And so that scene in the boat where she gets invited to dinner and she's like, oh no, I couldn't, and the belly grumbles, I loved that bit of natural humor. That, and I know we've seen it multiple times in different shows, but that's that is my favorite thing that they put in there, other than, you know, having the soul in the fight.
So I feel like that we focused more on the martial arts of this episode, but I did want to talk about how the two weapons that the Noble Gundam has, in addition to its stylish ribbon or stylish bows, is it has a laser hoop and a laser ribbon, both are which totally things lasers can do.
Yeah, how lasers work.
Yeah. And well, and what she basically does in the first fight is use the laser ribbon to, like, wrap around Gulski's arm and rip it off, which is also very cool.
That's very Master Asia.
Yes.
Of her. Oh. Yeah, oh, no wonder he sees potential now. Now,
like,
that he's seen
her
fight with
Berserker
mode.
Her ribbon game is strong.
Yeah.
And I also liked that Domon sneaked into the Russian camp just by wearing the uniform again, and they still fell for it. Like,
I think I mentioned this a couple episodes. I really prefer Domon as a side character. I like him so much more when he's not. You know, it was the previous episode. What was it?
That was Saisaichi in Love.
Yeah.
Yeah, where he's just sort of background. He seems so chill. He's like, yeah, let's just go check it out. You're like, I prefer this version of this man. I don't want him to be the main character anymore.
No, of course you don't. I think we've been saying that since episode 3.
Yeah, this has definitely been a series of, who's this character? Can they be the main character?
I want Schwarzbruder, the show. Just be like, takes off the hood. He still didn't figure it out. The hell. anyway, or Rain the show. That would be a sitcom, but still. I think that's everything. Is that everything?
Yeah, I think that we've covered everything for this episode. Join us next week when we talk about G Gundam episode 31. Beware the Clown. Dazzling Power.
I'm not watching that up. Nope.
Get
Mud,
Mad Gundam Maxter.
I refuse to watch this episode now. And so you all will have to recap me. I'm out. I don't do clowns. Do not do clowns. Not at all. Clowns and zombies. Those are my limits.
In the meantime, you can find all of our show notes over at nostalgiapilots.com. Follow me at hughjodonnell.com.
You can find out my stuff over at Skinner.fm.
You can find everything that I've got on my link tree, linktr.ee/resonantmoon. And you can find Jace's stuff at nerdswithvoices.com.
Okay, and until next week, what are these cold fists?